Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Three polls show Joe Biden still leads President Trump in battleground Wisconsin. In a preview of the November 3 election, a record 593,000 absentee ballots were cast in Tuesday's primary. 9 of 10 incumbents who faced challenges survived. Let's pick four races to watch between now and November 3. Wisconsin's number of COVID-19 deaths reached more than 1,000 this week. And who's rising and who's falling in JR's stock picks? Rewind, your week in review for August 14th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., what does it say when three national polls of President Trump versus Biden of Wisconsin all come up with the same numbers? Let's look at them quickly. Marquette University Law School poll, 49% Biden, 44% the president. UW-Madison Election Center, 49% Mr. Biden, 43% Mr. Trump. CBS News YouGov, 48% Mr. Biden, 42% Mr. Trump. One poll can be wrong, as we learned in 2016. What's your takeaway from three polls?
The race isn't over in Wisconsin, but I like, and the people I talk to like, where Joe Biden is more than where Hillary Clinton was 4 years ago. And kind of this is why. So if you go back 4 years ago and look at what was going on, Clinton was constantly up in Wisconsin. It was 3, 4, 5 points. You know, she had a big bounce at the convention, the first poll in August. But at the end of August, it was like a 3 or 4 point race in the Marquette poll. The thing, though, was Clinton was like around 44, 45, 46%. Now, it doesn't seem like much, but when Biden's at 48 and 49, if these polls are right, what it tells people I talk to is that he's right there on the edge of closing the deal. And why I say that is typically in politics, if you're the incumbent, the other side's break against you 2-1. That's the old rule of thumb that's been around forever. Now, we're in a new, unique environment in 2020, so who knows? But Biden's right there. So even the polls are off a little bit and underestimating Trump's support, Biden's basically right on the edge of knocking down that 50% plus one that you need to be sure you're going to win. So he's in a better spot. At the same time, there's a concern, Democrats I talked to, that he hasn't locked this up. I mean, think about it. What's going on in this country right now with the right track, wrong track numbers, the pandemic going on, unemployment numbers? Trump's still within striking distance. And one thing I hear from Democrats is how? Why is he still right there? Well, he's got a locked in base that really likes the guy no matter what. So again, Biden hasn't sealed the deal, but he's in a pretty strong position right now.
Follow up question, JR. How much did Biden help his ability to win Wisconsin picking Kamala Harris?
You know, good question. Like, obviously, there was talk about Tammy Baldwin back earlier this summer and spring. I never got the impression she was really a top-tier candidate. So with Senator Harris, I mean, obviously, there was an issue for Democrats in Wisconsin in 2016 with African-American turnout being down, right? So you have now a woman who is of African heritage as well as Indian heritage. So there is a unique first there. She's a woman. She's got this background. She's a U.S. senator. She was a district attorney. I mean, she has all these pluses that can maybe help excite voters of color this fall in a way that the Clinton-Kane ticket didn't 4 years ago. Now, don't forget, though, 4 years ago, yeah, Milwaukee had turned out for Clinton the way it did for Obama for a number of reasons, but rural Wisconsin also cratered for Democrats. And so you can't just focus on one and not the other. So Democrats still need to have either get back to closer to normal numbers in the suburbs, plus have Milwaukee doing well for them, or pick up ground in the suburbs that Trump is losing and use that suburbs plus urban areas to offset maybe what happened for you in the rural areas.
Okay, but just a really quick follow-up. Before she dropped out, she did start a campaign in Wisconsin prior to the April primary. Did she pick up any big endorsements? Do you think she had any momentum before she decided to drop out?
The last Marquette poll that was taken before she dropped out, she was basically not very well known.
Yeah,
I mean, I think she was a net negative in her favorability ratings because of Republicans, but just wasn't a well-known figure. So I don't know that she's somebody who walks in the door right now in Wisconsin will go, oh, I'm now going to be more excited because of this. Certain segments of the population might be, but it wasn't like she was a Bernie Sanders or a Warren who kind of got farther in the process and had more of a following in Wisconsin, more of an operation before she dropped out.
Okay, and I just want to end this segment by saying that let's look at 2016. President Trump got 47.2% of the vote. Secretary of State Clinton, Hillary Clinton, 46.4, a separation of 0.8%, or 23,000 votes. So that's why we have to continue to watch these polls. Amen?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now let's talk about, JR, we talked about the 10 incumbents that were challenged on Tuesday's primary. So only one of them lost, Stash Grzynski, the first-term Democrat from Green Bay, who had very credible game dealing with a very credible charge of sexually assaulting a staffer, although he told us in his interview he's been sober for 8 months. So let's quickly run down the victories. U.S. House 3rd District Democrat Ron Kine, no serious challenge, correct, JR? Okay. And then let's go to State Tanya Johnson, no serious challenge by the chief of staff to Senator Lena Taylor, right?
Right. No, it's just more drama between Latanya Johnson and Lena Taylor. There's been drama there for a while, and it kind of came to fore a Tuesday when Latanya Johnson took shots at Lena about this race. So it'll be an interesting caucus meeting come January.
Oh, very interesting. State Representative, Democratic Representative Cabrera easily beat her challenger. Republican Representative Rob Brooks easily dismissed his challenger, and Lisa Subak, Democrat in Madison, easily. JR, basically, were any of these 10 incumbents, and we'll finish the list in a minute, they all won with the exception of Grzynski, the 9 incumbent winners, won pretty handily, correct?
Yeah, and honestly, like with the other challengers, nobody really mounted that credible of a campaign. I mean, there were some, you know, signs of like a little bit of activity, but it wasn't like you saw, I don't know, a real big effort on his or her behalf from anybody outside groups. The exception was the Grzynski-Shelton race. And in that one, remember, Christina Shelton got a lot of support from groups like Planned Parenthood, conservation voters who used to employ Stash Grzynski as a political director before he became state lawmaker. And the big thing that I saw was the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee spent more than $120,000 in in-kind donations to help Shelton. Now, one, you almost never see a legislative campaign committee help a challenger against an incumbent. Don't forget, though, Grzynski was booted from the caucus after this case came to light about sexually harassing this Capitol staffer at a bar after hours. But you never, ever see that kind of money spent in a primary against an incumbent. What I was told, though, is that this money to take any resources away from other races, because the ultimate goal for Democrats is to prevent Republicans from getting 2/3 majorities in both houses this fall, so they can override Evers' vetoes without a Democratic votes. So normally you'd go, wow, that's a lot of money to spend on a primary. That could take money away from a Steve Doyle or a Beth Myers or Nick Milroy this fall, Robin Vining this fall. I was told this was national money that came in that was earmarked for this race. Now, I don't think there's an agreement in place or anything in writing, but the message was, we want to see this go to, you know, send a message about this kind of behavior. So it didn't really seem like it took away from other races, but that amount of money is just huge. And in talking to people around Madison, they kind of felt like Grzynski was probably going to lose on Tuesday, but the shellacking he got, I mean, he only got 19% of the vote,
yes,
was not expected by people I talked to around Madison. It really sent a message about the reaction to his behavior among voters in Green Bay.
Yeah, and history was made when the Assembly Democrats, when their caucus, 25,000 to defeat an incumbent. But let's wrap this up quickly. Democratic Assembly Member Sandy Pope won big. Republican Representative Ken Skowronski fended off a challenger. Co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, John Nygren, easily dismissed someone running, attacking him for his lack of progress on PFAS. And Adam Nalen easily dismissed his challenger. So 9 out of 10 incumbents won. So any PSs before we move on?
No, not really. I mean, a couple of the primary challengers, I asked to do interviews with them, and they turned down free media. If you're turning down free media as a challenger, it tells me something about your campaign.
Yeah, okay. Now, I'm going to pick, there's a few, I made a list this morning, but let's just focus on 4 key races to watch. First of all, JR, what's your take on Ron Kine, Democratic long-term incumbent in the 3rd Congressional District versus the Navy SEAL, Derek Van Orden? I've got that as close. You?
Not right now. Van Orden needs President Trump to do better than being down 5-6 points in Wisconsin.
Okay.
That district over there in Western Wisconsin leans Democratic, although Trump won it by 4.5 points 4 years ago and winning the state by less than one. If you're down five, you're not winning the third district. So you need Trump to do well to give you a shot. Number two, I'm watching outside help to see if it comes. Now, there's an argument to be made from Van Orden supporters that outside groups are waiting to make sure he got through the primary against Jesse Evans for the invested. But the Congressional Leadership Fund, which is the kind of campaign arm of House Republicans, has now got $90 million in TV up out there. None of it's in Western Wisconsin. Okay. So maybe it comes later. Maybe NRCC invests if the race looks good. But Ron Klein's got $3.1 million in the bank. He's been around for almost 25 years. Van Orden needs that help from Trump and outside groups to have a real shot.
Okay, let's talk about Kopanky versus Pfaff for Jennifer Schilling's seat. That's really a toss-up, isn't it?
If Trump does well in that district. If he doesn't, then no. I mean, go back 4 years ago, Trump did well in Western Wisconsin. Go back to Obama, he was winning that Senate district by 55% of the vote. If that happens, you don't have the environment for Kopanky to overcome the environment top of the ticket. Now, 4 years ago, it was like a four or five point race top of the ticket. So much like the Van Orden race, and look, both Kopanky and Van Orden could win. They just need the right environment to outperform the top of the ticket to be able to do that.
Well, okay. But I looked it up. The last time Kopanky Schilling, 62 votes, my friend. I still think that's...
Because of Trump's performance out there. Trump was plus 0.8 points. Now he's down five. He has to do better in West Wisconsin to give Kopanky a shot. I mean, Kopanky's got all the ingredients of a win if the environment is right. What I'm saying is you have to watch the top of the ticket. Remember, in this year, there's no statewide race besides president. People are going to vote for president, Congress, and then, bam, the state Senate race. So there's a stronger connection between the top of the ticket maybe and down ballot than we've seen other years. It's just a Kopanky outperformed in 04 when he won that seat in 08. But it's a much different environment than it was 20 years ago. It's much, or 16 years ago. It's a much harder partisan atmosphere. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge for him. Again, he can do it. He needs the environment to pull it off.
Okay. Is your vote for the closest state Senate race potentially in the 10th, a Democratic incumbent Patty Schottner, who won a special election, versus State Representative Rob Stafshult? Is that your vote for the closest potential state Senate race?
My feedback is most likely to flip. I don't know if it'd be closest because that's a Republican seat. So much like the Kopanky-Pfaff race, Schottner needs Biden to do well enough in that district to give her a shot. I mean, Republicans will tell me that she's good candidate, fits that district. You know, she's known, she was in elected office before. But if you're talking about a 10, 15 point gap atop a ticket, you can't really, it's tough to find people who can overcome that kind of a gap. So if it performs like it normally does, she's got a tough environment. If Biden makes it close, so she's got a shot. But I think that Stafshult has an edge going into election day, into the fall, has an edge right now.
Okay, and then the final one on my poor races to watch, excuse me, Eric Wimberger, who ran 4 years ago, versus the nephew of Jonathan Hansen. How do you see that one?
Republicans would have liked somebody besides Wimberger. He wasn't a great candidate 4 years ago. If the environment is right in terms of how Trump performs, it might not matter because Dave Hansen defied gravity in that district. He's one of those guys who could outperform top of the ticket, but he was well known, right? So like a Kopanky could outperform by 4 or 5 points in Western Wisconsin. Hansen could do it in that Green Bay district. I don't know that Jonathan Hansen has the same draw right now, but also the question is what's the environment going to be like? In the Marquette poll that we saw this past week, Biden was actually edging Trump in the Green Bay market. Now, there's a huge margin for error in a single poll when you talk about breakdowns geographically. Trump did really well in the Green Bay market 4 years ago. If that's going to be nip and tuck, that's a different kind of race than it would have been if Trump were running away with Green Bay like he did in 2016.
Okay, let's circle back in terms of Tuesday's election primary. 603,445 absentee ballots were returned, a record. Now, is somebody reporting or estimating that we could see 2 million absentee ballots cast on November 3rd for President, J.R.?
Well, here's the deal. We already have, as of this morning, 807,000, I think, as requests for absentee ballots for November. They're going to send 2.6 million applications to registered voters if they want an absentee ballot. Now, in the Marquette poll, we didn't see a picture of, like, overwhelming number of people looking to vote absentee. But if you look at what happened Tuesday, I think actually now, as of this morning's update from the Elections Commission, they've now got 600,000 plus absentee ballots returned. There's a lag in for when local clerks update information and this kind of computer system was reported. So we're talking already, we had 609,000 votes cast in August 2016 primary. We're already at 600,000 plus just in absentee ballots. So it looks like the kind of the personal expression of the preference is toward absentee balloting, even though the polling didn't really show us a heavy reliance on it. So I don't really know what to think for a number, but yeah, 2 million is totally feasible for November.
Okay, and I've got a follow-up question. When the president says yesterday, I don't suppose additional funding for the Postal Service because that would allow them to deliver mail-in absentee ballots, then he walks that back. How big of an issue is this funding of the Postal Service in terms of Wisconsin and the impact on a record number of absentee ballots for Wisconsin, JR?
Oh, it's significant, especially because remember, there are those series of court cases, the federal lawsuits that are pending combined into one case before Judge Connolly in Madison right now. He could issue a ruling, and I'm not predicting what he was going to do, but he could issue a ruling that could change when those ballots are due, all those kinds of things, because he said in this court hearing that he has doubts that if you wait till the last day to request an absentee ballot, which is 5 days from the election, you still ask for one, that if you wait that long, you will have it mailed to you and can return it via mail, a deadline. Now, we're seeing communities doing drop boxes. So as long as you have it back by election day at 8 p.m., you're okay. So if you're voting in, like I saw Wausau, for example, they have this very colorful drop box now that they've got put out there. So you can walk up there at 7:58 p.m. election day and drop it in, you're fine. But if you're relying on the mail to receive your ballot, send it back, you might want to make sure you request it and return it early this year.
Wasn't there a court ruling early this year? It was an election commission decision. You cannot, third-party groups cannot harvest ballots.
That was something the Election Commission was talking about. So what I'm waiting for is Connolly and what he's doing with these deadlines, because, again, 5 days for the election, you can request an absentee ballot still. You have to have it back by 8 p.m. on election day. That's the cutoff right now under state law.
Thank you. Okay, let's turn the page. Sadly, as the governor noted in his DHS briefing, Wisconsin hit the 1,000 mark for, tragically, COVID-19 deaths. Let's listen to the governor talk about that, followed by Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm. Please.
This is a devastating milestone, and every corner of Wisconsin has felt the tragic impact of this virus. We also know this virus has a disproportionate impact on communities of color, with Black, Latinx, and Indigenous Wisconsinites having higher rates of COVID-19 infections and deaths. The infection rate for Latinx Wisconsinites is over 5 times that of Wisconsin white Wisconsinites, and Black Wisconsinites are experiencing a death rate over 4 times higher than their white counterpart.
I know our numbers can feel discouraging, but we flattened the curve before, and we can do it again. By boxing in the virus, by stopping the spread, we can reduce transmission. And that is how we reflatten the curve here in Wisconsin.
Okay, JR, let's just look at some of the numbers. The tragedy of COVID goes on. We had more than, 983 new positives yesterday. But let's look at the counties with the most COVID deaths. Milwaukee, 462. Racine, 78. Waukesha, 61. Kenosha, 60. Brown, 54. These are yesterday's numbers. They'll be updated, of course, at 2 p.m. today. 5 counties responsible for 2/3 of the deaths. I think it was the governor or Secretary Palm said 52 of Wisconsin's 72 counties have had multiple deaths. But you have to look at it another way. I just find it fascinating. Both nationally and in the state, they measure positive cases per 100,000 residents. And when you look at it that way, okay, we repeat with Milwaukee, Racine, Waukesha, Kenosha, and Brown, but Walworth and Iron are added. JR, any thoughts on the 1,000 milestone and 63,000 positives?
The issues playing into both why Governor Evers' numbers are so good in the Marquette poll and why President Trump's are not that great in the Marquette poll. This has become one of the top issues for voters, this and the economy. And as we, if these numbers continue without a vaccine, without some kind of like sign of things really turning around, it's going to play a huge factor in the November election.
Okay. And let's look, I was just intrigued by some of these questions and some of these responses in the Charles Franklin poll. But we have to look at the race issue. Who's dying in Wisconsin from COVID-19. And when you get to the DHS numbers, 72% white deaths, 21% black. And I think the African-American population in Wisconsin is about 6.5, 6.7. Sound right, JR? Something like that? Okay. 5% multiple other unknown, 1% American Indian, 1% Asian Pacific Islander. But I'm intrigued. When you go to Axios, they track Johns Hopkins numbers, which is now part of the COVID tracking project numbers, in terms of regional deaths. And Wisconsin, well, let's count it down. Illinois first, 7,881. These are yesterday's numbers. They've been updated today, but we didn't have a chance to do the update, but not much changes. Second is Michigan, 6,538. Then Minnesota, 1,726, 1,726. Then Wisconsin, 1,018. And then Iowa, 941. Any perspective on this, JR?
No, I mean, you got to look at like Michigan and Illinois, kind of what happened when they, when these mask mandates took effect, when they took various actions. I mean, I'm not sure how it all impacted it, but, you know, it is going to be, like I said, unless there's a big change in these numbers, it's going to be a huge issue come November.
Right. And just a PS on these Midwest numbers. Another way to look at it, as I said, is positive cases per 100,000 residents. And Wisconsin is third, if you look at that, with these five Midwest states. Iowa is first with 1,607 per 100,000. And Illinois is second, 1,573. Then Wisconsin with 1,170. Then Minnesota, 1,140. And finally, Michigan with 1,003. Okay. I'm done wonking out on those numbers. But I also found it interesting, as I alluded to, some of the Charles Franklin numbers on some of these other COVID issues. Number one, should masks be worn in public places? 69% yes, 29% no, JR. So here's my question. Is this 69-29 one reason why Assembly Speaker Robin Voss will not agree with Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald's call for the legislature to come in and overturn the governor's statewide masks order?
Oh, it's the reason. Especially the reason. Because he knows those numbers in the suburbs. And that's the thing. If you look at like the breakdown, independents overwhelmingly support it. Democrats overwhelmingly support it. Republicans are split. Actually, there are more Republicans who oppose the mandate than support it, which tells you the squeeze that Robin's in, right? The base wants it to go away, or at least the base in the rural areas, or split on it. Democrats and independents will support it. Where are the Republicans most vulnerable right now? Their suburban seats. If they come in and take action on this, those guys take a hit. I mean, either way, what they do, because you either upset the base because you didn't overturn it, or you upset independents because you did overturn it, it just puts you in a difficult position.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, let's deal with two more COVID questions with the Charles Franklin poll, the MMU poll. Comfortable letting students return to school. This is very interesting. Of everyone polled, 48% not comfortable, 45% comfortable. But when you parse that and say, what's your response if you have school-aged children, there's a shift. 53% of parents with school-aged children are comfortable returning to the classrooms, 45% are not. JR, is this reflective of parents who have to go to work and wonder how they can go to work and take care of their kids who may be at home with virtual learning? Do you see that as the reason for the shift?
There's that. There's also the fear of like your child losing a whole year of school. Don't forget, they lost almost a semester or a quarter in the spring, right? So they lost a quarter in the spring. They're going to lose, like my kids are not going to go in person until at least after October 30th. You're talking another quarter in the fall. Now you're talking a semester of school basically down that they're losing. If it goes farther, that's just, for some parents, tough to swallow the idea of not being in class and getting an education that way versus being on a Zoom call with a teacher every day. And how effective will that be?
Okay, then final question. Are you worried personally about the risk of getting COVID? And let's talk about the shift from June to August. Let's talk about the recent August poll. 63% of those polled were somewhat or very worried about the personal risk of getting COVID-19. 36% not very worried, not at all worried. Now let's Now let's talk about June, because in June, 55% were somewhat or very worried, 45% were not at all or not very worried. That's just interesting. Any PSs on that before we go to stocks? Mr. Ross.
Cases were going like this, started going like this, now they're going back up like that. That's, yeah, I think, what drives those numbers.
Okay, Mr. Stock Picker, go. Rising.
So Tony Evers, he's plus 20 for his job rating in the Marquette poll. I mean, that's something Scott Walker never even dreamed of. You know, he was a fairly divisive figure in Wisconsin politics. Evers, though, has got good numbers. Remarkably, 20% of self-identified Republicans give him good marks and have a favorable impression of his job performance. That's pretty good for a guy in such a polarized state. It's probably driven by COVID-19 and his handling of that. Also got positive marks. People I talked to, you know, there's this bubble around the Capitol, this square essentially, where there are all kinds of questions about like unemployment program and the problems there, these other issues that government running under Evers. But for people outside that bubble, they're not fazed by that stuff. It's also why you're seeing Republicans now doing, from what I found, $42,500 in a cable buy of an ad accusing Evers being asleep during the protests back in early this summer.
Yeah,
they're trying to plant a seed for people who think Evers is doing a good job and trying to make sure his numbers don't harden, because those numbers harden in the mid-50s. That's good for him going to 2022. So trying to stop that from happening.
Okay. And mixed.
Kanye West, talking to people, they give his campaign points for creativity, but they're not sure his argument about what 5 o'clock means is going to fly with the Elections Commission. Now, this is why it's important. Go back to when West turned in his nomination papers. It looks like, from what we could see, it was just after 5 o'clock. State law says they're due by 5 p.m. Well, what's 5 p.m. mean? His campaign claims 5 p.m. means 5 p.m. and 59 seconds. So the true cutoff is 5:01 p.m. Now, I don't know about you when you had curfew in high school, Steve, but that did not fly with my dad. That actually was 12:01 a.m. I had to be home. Now, nonetheless, what we've got to watch is this coming week, because the commission is going to meet on
Thursday.
Thursday.
Right.
Commission staff will have a recommendation out at some point ahead of that, what it believes should happen. And then the question is, do we go to court? No matter what the commission decides, somebody might sue and say, we want the different outcome. If West is denied ballot access because he was late, then it becomes, how much resources does he have, or his supporters, i.e. Republicans, have to put into a legal fight? Because we don't know what to think of how close the race is going to be come November. But if he can peel off 20, 25,000 votes from Biden, it can make a difference. Now, Democrats, you talked to them about Kanye West, they're offended by the idea by Republicans that just because you have an African-American entertainer on the ballot, you'll peel away black votes just because they have the same skin color, right? They think that West does not have the appeal that these Republicans claim that he does. So it's still unknown. And I will tell you that I think we'll write more words about Kanye West than he's going to deserve in terms of impact the presidential race at this point. But you got to pay attention to it, because you just don't know right now
where
it's going to end up.
Okay. Good point. You got about 40 seconds for falling.
The Election Commission, look, they've had issues before of like being late. We had another incident this Tuesday where it took until after 3 a.m. for them to post the final numbers for assembly races. Here's why it's important. If Wisconsin's a tipping point come November, if Milwaukee is key, if we see this surge of absentee ballots, there's going to be a huge focus on the Election Commission and how it counts those ballots. Remember in 2018, it was like about 11 o'clock at night. We saw this race going back and forth between Evers and Walker. Also, the commission said, hey, we have X number of votes you have to count, and it swung things for Evers. Can you imagine Donald Trump on election night, if Wisconsin's the one we're watching, and all of a sudden the commission says, hey, we still have 50,000 or 100,000 votes to count, and those votes swing things toward Joe Biden over the presidency? It'll fuel the conspiracy theories and Trump's arguments about the election. I'm not saying it's going to happen. You know, if we have a blowout in Wisconsin, no big deal. But you got to watch the commission. They're getting more equipment. I think they're getting some stuff to help. But that's going to be a focal point come election night in Wisconsin, November.
I'm not defending the Milwaukee Elections Commission. I'm just pointing out that the State Elections Commission stats showed that they dealt with 101,695 returned absentee ballots. I'm not defending them, just adding a fact. Okay, let's talk about next week. We've got the Elections Commission. We've got DNC scheduled to speak. Governor Evers, Senator Baldwin, Representative Moore, Mayor Barrett to welcome them. But we also have President Trump and JR, am I correct, Vice President Pence coming here?
That is the plan. Trump will be in Oshkosh Monday afternoon. Pence will be somewhere to be determined. I haven't seen that announcement yet, but we're thinking Wednesday for that.
Okay.
It's going to be a busy week. And basically, the Trump campaign is trying to troll Democrats that Joe Biden's not coming to Milwaukee, but he's coming to Wisconsin.
Right. And I think next week's Rewind, we should highlight these voices, both the Democrats as they talk to the convention, and obviously the president and vice president. We'll have the best of those speeches for Rewind next week. I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for August 14.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.